Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
Ugh, you said you were over him, but his hoodie is still in your rotation. It's time. Grab your phone, snap a few pics, and sell it on Depop. List it in minutes with no selling fees. And just like that, a guy 500 miles away just paid full price for your closure. And right on cue.
Hey, still got my hoodie?
Nope, but I've got tonight's dinner paid for. Start selling on Depop, where taste recognizes taste. List now with no selling fees. Payment processing fees and boosting fees still apply. See website for details.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the amazing Rico Bronya podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
It is Rico Bronya. Welcome in to a brand new episode of the Rico, episode number 638. I am your host, Evan Roberts. We got a lot to talk about today. I was jotting this down over the last few days as we get set for spring training games and actually watching baseball. What are the 10 most intriguing things to me about this 2026 Mets spring training? So that will be the focus on today's Rico. I'll get to that in a couple of minutes. Let me clean up some house business. Is it house business? Let me clean up some housework. I don't know. Some things going on over the last few days in New York, Metsville, as they say. Steve Cohen met the media a couple of days ago. We focused on what Steve said to Howie Rose a day earlier, his answer on Pete Alonso, his answer on Edwin Diaz. I thought a lot of his press conference was very similar. So I'm not going to sit here and replay all these clips of Steve Cohen. I actually only pulled one. In terms of the captaincy thing, I think we've all heard it. We discussed it on Evan and Tiki. It was discussed on the afternoon program as well. The fact that Steve Cohen adamantly said, as long as I own the team, we will never have a captain. My opinion on the captaincy, and you can go back to last year when we talked about it on the Rico, is that it's overrated. It's really not an essential thing. Now, why did Steve Cohen go from, I don't know, we'll see, media-driven, blah, 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 to I am adamantly against it? I'm not sure. I think it's fair to speculate that maybe the rocky nature of last year had something to do with it, or maybe Steve Cohen realized it is an overrated thing. There's only two captains in all of Major League Baseball, Aaron Judge and Salvador Perez. Captaincy in baseball is not exactly popular, even in our own franchise's history. Like, we have Keith and Gary, and remember, it was Keith Hernandez, and then it was Gary Carter, because I think there was some kind of bitterness or controversy over who the real captain was. Then you had Johnny Franco for a bunch of years. Then you had David Wright. So I think it's an overrated thing. I think Steve made it a story by being as adamant as he was that as long as he owns the team, they'll never be a team captain. You want to read into that? You want to say that has something to do with last year? Maybe, maybe not. I don't personally care that much about it, quite frankly. I didn't last year when it was talked about. I don't this year. But the underrated thing that was asked of Steve Cohen that I did want to play for you is a question that I was asked many, many times during the offseason. Whenever we would open up the Rico Bronya mailbag, this question was one of the most popular questions that Met fans would ask. And it was, do you think the lockout, or at least the pending 2027 work stoppage, has something to do with Steve Cohen and David Stearns not wanting to go long-term on players? That was asked a lot because other than Juan Soto, as we all know, and even the bid on Yoshinobu Yamamoto, the Mets don't offer long-term deals. It's just not something they've done over the last two seasons. And so the question was asked point blank to the owner of the New York Mets, is that strategy, does that strategy have something to do with, hey, there may be a salary cap. Hey, there may be a work stoppage. We don't know what the next CBA is going to look like. Here is the question, and here is Steve Cohen's answer.
You mentioned we have no idea what's going to happen next year in 2027, but yeah. Any decisions, the possibility of a lockout, a cap, did that inform any of the decisions you guys made and how you guys handled free agents, what you offered, negotiations, anything like that?
Yeah, I don't think the cap had really much to do with it. I mean, obviously, I think more of the focus was on trying to create flexibility short term, intermediate term, and long term.
Now, the question is, do you believe him? He mentions a cap, which is like a dirty word. I think the owners are not supposed to even imply anything about a salary cap. I do believe him because I think this is a strategy. And I don't know what the new CBA is going to look like. I have said many times, I don't think it's going to involve a salary cap. I think maybe the luxury tax fees and penalties will go up, something of that nature. But I'd be very surprised if we end up with a salary cap. More on that in a few minutes, because obviously the Tony Clark story is monstrous. But his answer is the answer I've been giving throughout the offseason when I've been asked, hey, what do you think? Do you think this is related to CBA issues, or do you think this is just a strategy? I think it's a strategy. If you go through free agency and the history of free agency, and not just with the Mets, but throughout Major League Baseball, it usually doesn't pay off. Now, that doesn't mean you shouldn't sign a free agent. That doesn't mean we shouldn't be doing RICOs, breaking down all the free agents you should add, because sometimes it does work. Carlos Beltran is going into the Hall of Fame and the Mets Hall of Fame. I think we'd all agree that worked. Gerrit Cole with the New York Yankees, despite having Tommy John surgery, that worked. Randy Johnson with Arizona is probably pound for pound the most successful free agent signing in the history of Major League Baseball. That worked. Now, there are many that don't work. Chris Bryant basically can't get out of bed for the Colorado Rockies. That didn't work. Jason Bay, as we know, that didn't work. And I think if we did a study on does long-term contracts, and that's where I'd be specific on it, do long-term free agent contracts in general work out? The answer is no. So that doesn't mean you should ever sign a free agent, but what it means is if you're going to try to be smart, you're going to be very picky about who you sign. You're not just going to say, hey, that's the best available free agent. Go get that guy. You're going to be very, very picky. And we have now had three off seasons of David Stearns under Steve Cohen, and I would say he's very picky. Some Met fans want to say he's cheap. He's not cheap. I mean, gee, how much money have they spent? They've spent a lot of money, some of them on short-term deals, as we've seen, most of them on short-term deals. And obviously, we know about the bid for Yamamoto and the acquisition of Juan Soto. It's not cheapness. I think it's a strategy. So I thought that answer by Steve Cohen, not just because I've been saying it for months, but I do agree with it. I think that we do have a pending lockout. We all know what could happen, what may happen. I don't think that's been the basis for this offseason. Speaking of the lockout, let's address the Tony Clark stuff. When Tiki and I were on the air on Tuesday and the news came out that Tony Clark was resigning, I described it on the air as significant but boring news. It was significant because, hey, you know, we are less than a year out from a lockout. Tony Clark has been running the Players Association for over a decade. To have him have to resign is a major story, even if it's kind of boring. It's like, who runs the players? Who cares? And the assumption, and it was reported in The Athletic when the report first came out, that Tony Clark's resignation had everything to do with the lawsuit against him and members of the Players Association for the allocation of funds from licensing fees that he is accused of using to enrich himself, which is very serious allegations and made perfect sense that that would be the reason he was resigning. Well, after we signed off the air, and Craig, I know, had a lot of fun with it, it came out that that wasn't the reason he was resigning, that there was some kind of inappropriate relationship with his sister-in-law who was working in the Players Association. That's obviously a story that I think is more appealing, I guess, just because of the soap opera nature to it. And I'm sure we'll talk about it more on talk radio. I'm not going to bore you with it here. Not bore you with it here. It's not that boring, but I guess I'm not going to break it down here. What I will say is the owners definitely smell blood. And I said that prior to knowing why Tony Clark resigned, because ultimately, as much as people are going to have fun with it and talk about it and debate which sister-in-law is worse, the reality is no matter how Tony Clark was resigning, no matter how he was leaving that post, it was putting the Players Association in disarray. Because now, besides a temp head of the Players Association, they're also going to look for a long-term head of the Players Association, and they're about to go through a labor war that I think will rival 1994. Because, and it's not about him, it's about the owners. If the owners are going to go to war on a salary cap, and a lot of indications are there that they will, the sport's going to be shut down. You know, you go back a few years to the 21 into 22 lockout. While I was worried we were going to miss games, they weren't insisting on a salary cap. Like, I think it was mentioned very briefly at the beginning of the process. And then once it was dropped, you just knew, all right, they'll find common ground. We may miss games, but they're not going to blow up a season over this. If they are insisting on a cap, they will blow up the season. And I think that because there is some disarray in the Players Association, I believe that the owners, led by Rob Manfred, will be more likely to be aggressive in these negotiations to try to blow a season up. So what does it mean in terms of baseball in 2027? Short answer, not good. Now let's get to baseball in 2026. Carlos Mendoza meets the media every single day, did a great interview with Craig and Big Mac, which you could check out on the free Odyssey app or wherever you download your podcasts. But the most interesting newsy development that came from Carlos Mendoza, I thought, was what he said about Luis Robert Jr. Luis Robert Jr. was an acquisition that, you know, I've talked about for multiple years as a guy that I think could be a really good bounce back candidate with this team. Well, Mendy was meeting the media on Tuesday, and while talking about Luis Robert Jr., he unveiled a conservative plan with Robert Jr. coming out of spring training.
And, you know, we want to be proactive, and I'll throw that out there. He won't be playing in games out of the gate. You know, this is something that when we traded for him, our trainers, you know, put their hands on it and identify some of the teams, especially in the lower half, that needed to be strengthened out. So he's going through full workouts. He's going to be getting live at bat. But as far as putting him in game settings when he has to full goal, whether it's like a beat out a ground ball, we're not going to put him out of the gate. So he's going to be on a progression. So I'll throw that out there. But as far as like the ceiling and the potential from the player, man, he's got a chance to do something special here.
This is actually very smart, and it gives you a sign, hopefully a sign, that the Mets actually know what the hell they're doing and the Chicago White Sox didn't. They bring this kid in, this man in, and they say, all right, for the last 2 years, he's had a tough time staying healthy. Let's analyze him. Let's see, is there a warning sign? Is there something that maybe needs to change for Luis Robert Jr. to not miss half a season? And Carlos Mendoza explained, yeah, he needs to be stronger in his lower body. So obviously Robert Jr., hopefully he's going to work his ass off to improve that. And as far as not playing a lot early in spring training, this is common from the Mets. We've seen this for the last couple of years with Brandon Nimmo. And I think when Nimmo first had that happen, we had concerns. And then we realized, oh, wait, this is to get him through a 162-game season. Luis Robert Jr. not playing the first week or two of spring training, however long it lasts, sucks selfishly. Because if you're watching these games, you want to see your new players, especially the ones that are big questions going into 2026. But Mendoza's answer is smart. Is it going to work? We shall see. Is this going to keep him on the field? We shall see. But he's coming from a franchise that apparently didn't know what they're doing. And say what you want about the new New York Mets. They've invested a lot in trying to improve a lot of aspects of their team, including this. He also mentioned Francisco Alvarez is going to get a slower start to spring training. Same with Jorge Polanco. I don't think that Polanco's slower start to spring training and not getting into games means that his development of playing first base is going to be stymied. I mean, he's still working out. He's still participating. He's still doing drills. Again, it's from a selfish perspective. We don't get to see him play first base. The Brett Beatty thing feels like a minor injury that they're trying to curb. Basically, Mendy admitted that Beatty felt some soreness in his right hamstring. And so he, too, will get a slower start to spring training. But keep this in mind. This is a long, long process before we get to opening day. So missing a week, missing 2 weeks, missing 3 weeks for a position player is not that big of a deal. I mean, I don't know how many plate appearances you actually need down in the Grapefruit League, but it's not that many. Pitching is different, and we've talked a lot about that. You miss a bullpen session, you know, there's a chance you may not be ready for the start of the season. So when Carlos Mendoza was going through the litany of guys who are going to get off to slower starts in spring, my reaction was, all right, great. None of them are pitchers. Obviously, with Alvarez, there's always a concern about staying healthy. That's going to be the biggest question about him. Same with Robert Jr., the two younger players. And I would almost compare them in that they're two former prospects. They've shown flashes at the major league level. I think Robert Jr. more. But injuries are probably their biggest derailment of their major league careers. And those two guys, Alvarez and Robert Jr., have a chance to make the Met lineup go from pretty good to amazing. I mean, if those two guys are what we think they can be, if Robert Jr. was the guy who flashed in 2023, if Alvarez is the guy who's flashed for bits and pieces but actually stays healthy and plays 135 games to the point where halfway through the season, we're arguing he should DH when he doesn't catch, that's when you know he's made it. The moment we have that discussion on Noriko, where we're like, man, I get Alvarez needs to sit. We all love Luis Torrens' defense, but boy, we got to keep his stick in the lineup by DHing him. That's when you know he's made it. The other observation about Robert Jr., and then I'll get to my most appealing top 10 spring training storylines for the New York Mets. I'm going to make an educated guess about Luis Robert Jr. that
right now, get up to 20% off select online storage solutions. Put heavy-duty HDX totes to good use, protecting what's important to you. The solid, impact-resistant design prevents cracking, and the clear base and sides make items easy to find, even when the totes are stacked. Find select online shelving and tote storage up to 20% off at the Home Depot to organize every room in your home, from your garage to your attic. Visit HomeDepot.com. How doers get more done.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
Even when he's healthy, right? I'm going to play the game that the Mets do a good job of keeping him healthy. I think he sits once a week. I think he's going to fall in line with, I don't want to say Giancarlo with the Yankees because it feels like he sits every 4 or 5 days, but maybe even Jeff McNeil. Now, Jeff McNeil was an everyday player who didn't play every day. There were a lot of days, and I know when McNeil was hitting, this would cause frustration, but he'd sit often. Like McNeil would basically sit once a week. I think to keep Robert Jr. healthy, I expect he's sitting once a week. And what that does is it creates opportunity. It creates opportunity for Tyrone Taylor to get at-bats, for either MJ Melendez or Mike Tauchman to get at-bats. I'll talk about Tauchman in a minute. For even Brett Beatty to get more at-bats. It creates opportunities. But I kind of have a feeling that's how they're going to handle Luis Robert Jr., where he's an everyday player. But I would almost guess, and I'll keep track of it just to see if I'm right or wrong about this, that I almost expect once a week they sit him. What I'd be curious about, and this is one of those file away I'll ask Mendy, are you comfortable shifting Benj to center field? Or do you view him as, hey, he's playing right field, he's the right fielder, that's it. And the reason I ask that is if there is a day, let's say against a really tough righty, where Mendy says, hey, I'm going to give Robert Jr. a day because we're sitting him once a week and this is the right matchup to sit him. Do you and are you comfortable with an outfield of Soto in left, Benj in center, Beatty in right? That I don't know. But I can see that if you're good with moving Benj back to center field, a position he's played, and if I'm right that Luis Robert Jr. is going to play a lot and play mostly every day, but not every single day. All right, let's get to my storylines of the spring. Here's the way I would view this. If you're a geek like me, where you're going to watch as many spring training games as you can, which I will, even though SNY is making it more difficult because they're televising fewer games, but you're going to make the effort to watch every game. And even when you don't watch a game, check the box score, maybe listen to the great Keith Radd and Howie Rose and Pat McCarthy on the Odyssey Mets Radio Network. These are the things that while you're consuming the games, because wins and losses don't mean anything, we know that, these are the things you're looking for. Are you ready? Here we go. Number 10. And I probably should make this higher, But I think the default with this entire list could be injuries, injuries, injuries. So this is my one injury thing, and that's, can all six starting pitchers get out of Dodge healthy? David Stearns and Carlos Mendoza refused to answer questions about a six-man rotation. My guy Big Mac did God's work. He asked Mendy at the end of their interview yesterday on the Carton Show, hey, Carlos, that piggybacking thing, I call it tag teaming, but that piggybacking thing at the end of the year that you tried, kind of cool. If you've got all six guys healthy, would you do it again? And Mendy took the approach of, oh, that's a good problem to have, which doesn't answer the question. But I think Mendy and David Stearns are very careful to not assume all six guys will be healthy. And neither have I. We did a Rico just a few days ago. I forget what episode it was, 236, 235. Go back into the archives and look, in which I made my projected 26-man roster. And I assume that two of these six guys will not get out of camp healthy. Now, I hope I'm wrong. I hope all six get healthy. I hope that we are going to have discussions on piggybacking and six-man rotations and sending guys to bullpens, and we can debate it. But Carlos Mendoza and David Stearns will not even engage in questions because they don't want to jinx it. Now, luckily, I'm doing this, Rico Bronya, in a beautiful studio here at Odyssey. Usually, when I do in-studio Rico Bronyas away from the home base of the Rico in my home, I do it in your typical WFAN studio. I've got a very fancy studio. I'm doing it here. Hopefully, the sound is good. But I've got a big mahogany right in front of me. So I'm going to knock on it. Not sure you can hear it, but that's me saying, hey, I hope all six come out healthy. And if they're not going to come out healthy, who are the guys that aren't healthy? And obviously that's a big factor here. If I could protect two, if I could put my arms around two people and say they are healthy, they get to spring out of spring training, 1,000%. It's obviously Freddy Peralta and Nolan McClain. If I was going to rank them, just based on what they've done, it's probably Peralta, McClain, 1-2. And then believe it or not, Clay Holmes. Clay was very reliable last year. Let's not forget that. So storyline number 10, I guess I'm going to go in reverse order. You know what? I'm going to go 1-10. 10-1. That's how I'll do it. Storyline number 10, can all six starters come out healthy? Storyline number 9, Craig Kimbrell. I'm fascinated to watch him. Obviously, like most Met fans, we never liked Craig Kimbrell from his days in Atlanta, even that infamous moment with San Diego when Justin Upton hit the home run off Jairus Familia, and then Craig Kimbrell came in the game. Craig Kimbrell is interlocked in Mets history. He's now become a journeyman. He's old. But does he have something left in him? Can he be a veteran who secures maybe the final roster spot out of this bullpen and then at least for a period of time give the Mets some bullets? I'll tell you something crazy right now. I know the goal is that if Craig Kimbrell, boy, that's a tongue twister when you say his name a lot. I know the goal is that Craig Kimbrell makes the team, has a great year, and is a big factor for the Mets in 2026. I'm going to give you a small goal. How about for the first half of the year, he's awesome. And then after that, you know, based on age, based on losing all the bullets, he withers away. I would actually sign for that. I know that we're looking at making the playoffs and winning a championship, but it's a 162-game season. And we've seen with bullpens, it's not just up and down from a year-to-year basis. Sometimes it's up and down from a month-to-month basis. And also late in the year, you've got more possibilities of trading for guys at the deadline, though that didn't work last year, or even some of your younger starters ending up and helping out of the bullpen. So I'm not even sitting here saying, boy, I want Craig Kimbrell to make 70 appearances and be the best reliever after Devin Williams this entire year. My question is, can he help him for a few months? I want to have greater goals, but I would sign for that right now. If you told me in April, May, and June, Craig Kimbrell's a big part of this Met bullpen and then withers away, I'd sign for that because you're trying to get through the full load of a season. But does he make the team? Let's start with that basic premise. So every time he gets into a game, I think we're watching with a scout's eye. We're checking the velocity. We're checking the stuff. And obviously, we're checking the results. Let's get to storyline number 8. And now this is a real competition. The other day, the New York Mets signed Mike Tauchman to a minor league contract. Mike Tauchman has been good. the last few years. And when I say good, I don't mean he should be the starting right fielder good, but is he good enough to be on a major league roster based on his performance the last couple of years? Absolutely. From his time with the Yankees to his last 3 years in Chicago, the thing that jumps out at me about the Sox man is his eye, is his ability to draw walks. He feels like a perfect, absolutely perfect fourth or fifth outfielder. And the problem that Pete Hoffman's going to have, and maybe some of the audience are going to have, is if we're going to create a Team MJ and a Team Talkman. By the way, I can't call MJ Melendez Team MJ. It sounds right. Team MJ Melendez, we'll just say his full name, versus Team Talkman. I know Pete Hoffman's going to take Team MJ Melendez. And the only reason he's doing it is because he was eligible as a catcher in fantasy a year ago. And so there's this fantasy that he's going to catch. I don't think he's going to catch. I think he's the emergency catcher. And most of the time, you don't use your emergency catcher. So I think if you can get that out of your head and just view the players, why wouldn't you prefer Mike Tauchman on this roster over MJ Melendez?
Who's got the bigger upside?
I mean, probably MJ Melendez because he's younger and he's got pop.
Okay. So I would hope that that's the guy that turns it around and has the that turns it around, but that's the guy that you can, you know, groom and like the same way they're going to work with Luis Robert Jr., work with MJ Melendez. Maybe there's something they can figure out with him. I'm excited for the potential of MJ Melendez. That's really what it comes down to.
But I've got great news for you, Pete. And this is a huge, huge factor. MJ Melendez has options. You can send him to the minor leagues, and if he tears it up in AAA and Mike Tauchman's hitting 185 or someone goes on the IL, Melendez is back here. Mike Tauchman is a 35-year-old veteran on a minor league deal. I don't think he's going to AAA. So that's also a factor we have to keep in mind. Plus, we are probably talking about a fourth or fifth outfielder just based on the makeup of this roster. When you talk about bigger upside, I'm talking about the fifth outfielder. I don't know if upside is a thing I'm more drawn in by. I'm more drawn in by reliability. And Mike Tauchman over the last 3 years, 750 OPS, get on base 35% of the time, draw walks, real veteran player. I think he's just more solid on a 26-man roster. That's just me, though.
No, I get it. And I know, listen, the MJ Melendez is half kidding because the reality is you're right. He hasn't played catcher in a long time. But David Stearns, it doesn't stop him. If he knows that, hey, I might be able to get something out of this guy at a certain position, he may use that to his advantage.
Keep this in mind, too, because right now I'm framing it as MJ Melendez versus Mike Tauchman. If Carson Bench doesn't make the team, there's a really good chance both of these guys will make the team. And the starting right field situation would be Brett Beatty, Tyrone Taylor, some Mike Tauchman. You know what I mean? So I think there is a world in which both of these guys do make the team, but that involves Carson Bench, who we will get to a little bit later on our spring training storyline. Let me get to number seven, the final bullpen spots. And that sort of involves Craig Kimbrel, but it also involves all the other guys that are going to be battling for the last two or three bullpen spots. We mentioned some of the names on our projected 26-man roster. Right now, Devin Williams is a lock. Brooks Raley is a lock. Luke Weaver is a lock. And Luis Garcia are locks. Those are four absolute locks, guaranteed major league contracts, no options. Then you've got Waskar Brazoban, who I think is close to a lock, assuming he's healthy. But he has an option left, so they could always send him down. Same with Tobias Myers. Tobias Myers could go to the minor leagues if the Mets want to keep him stretched out as a starter. He could also enter the rotation. And we talk about guys being healthy in the rotation. That will impact Tobias Myers. So those are guys that should be in this bullpen at some point, maybe right away, probably right away. But those are the factors that could change that. AJ Minter, throw him away for a month. Even though he's throwing right now, which is a great sign, David Stearns has already made it clear he's not making the team. We won't see him till May. So we're talking about the competition between Brandon Waddell, who is getting the baseball first on spring training opening day, which is really depressing. I mean, Mendy, give me something other than Brandon Waddell to start the first spring training game. But Brandon Waddell, who is a non-roster invitee, is certainly a guy who could take one of those last few bullpen spots. Alex Carrillo, Joey Gerber, Justin Hagenman. Dylan Ross is the guy I think we're most intrigued by because of the potential he has. Austin Warren, Brian Hudson, who I think has an inside track at being the second lefty in the bullpen. Joe Jakes, Adert Alzale, Carl Edwards. And that's just to name a few. You know, there are so many guys who could potentially, based on a good spring training, and Craig Kimbrell, don't want to forget him because we mentioned him earlier, they're all in contention for those final two or three bullpen spots. That is always a competition. You know, most years you come in to a spring training maybe with more set roster spots than this Met team or more set everyday players than this Met team. Obviously, right field is up for grabs. But usually you're going to have that competition for the final few bullpen spots, and there are a bunch. Number six on the storylines to watch, who's playing shortstop in these meaningless games without Francisco Lindor? We know it's not Bo Bichette, but what I'm most intrigued by is Ronnie Mauricio. You know, there's a lot of boring names of guys who are going to play shortstop with Francisco Lindor out, and none of them will likely be factors like Vidal Brujan. I don't think anyone's all that excited about watching him or who is some of the other guys. I think I wrote it down. Who's playing shortstop? I think I already forgot. It doesn't even matter. I guess that shows you. Jackson Clough. How could I forget Jackson Clough? But I do think like seeing the fill-in shortstops, seeing if any of them jump out at you just in case Lindor isn't healthy. But more importantly, how much do we see of Ronnie Mauricio at shortstop? And I think that how much we see a Mauricio at shortstop would also kind of give us an indication on how confident they are that Francisco Lindor is going to be ready for the start of the season. So when I score that first spring training game on Saturday, I have no idea what name I'm writing down at shortstop. It's not going to be exciting, but it is something worth keeping an eye on because we know Francisco Lindor is not playing in spring training for a very long time, probably until the very end of spring training. And then assuming it gives him enough time to get ready for the start of the season. Let's get to storyline number five. I'm going to project something on all of you. Little projection. I have said that I believe Ronnie Mauricio is going to start the year in AAA. I believe that Carlos Mendoza's comments that we played on the last Rico also indicate that Ronnie Mauricio is going to start in the minor leagues. And the reason I have said that, the reason Mendy said it, is because they think he needs to play every day. Okay. Well, let me walk you through a way where all of a sudden Pete Hoffman's coming on the Rico. Maybe even I'm coming on the Rico saying this, where we are all pining for Ronnie Mauricio to make the team. What if we enter or in the midst of spring training and Mark Vientos is doing nothing? He's hitting 175. He looks lost. And what if Ronnie Mauricio is tearing it up? What if Brett Beatty is struggling in spring training? Look, Mark Vientos and Brett Beatty have both shown flashes at the major league level, and right now we're all higher on Beatty than Vientos based on the close of last year. Makes perfect sense. Beatty was the third baseman until Bo Bichette walked into this world. Both guys, though, have a lot to prove. What if both of those guys have rough spring trainings and Ronnie Mauricio sitting 405 with five home runs and 12 RBIs? I'll tell you exactly what would happen. Pete Hoffman would say, hey, Ev, how is Ronnie Mauricio not making this team? How is he not the everyday designated hitter? How is that not a thing? I'll be getting emails saying, come on, guys. Mark Vientos sucked last year. For some reason, Evan still believes in him. Brett Beatty has mostly been bad at the major league level. How is Ronnie Mauricio not an everyday player? I think that based on spring performances, the DH discussion could get very heated. Because I think right now we're all just, all right, Vientos is going to be on the team. He'll DH a lot. Probably against lefties, play a little first base. Brett Beatty will probably play a bunch of right field. He'll play some first base. He'll play some DH. And Ronnie Mauricio, you throw him in the corner, man, because he needs to play every day. I think that spring training can change that discourse. So save this. Now, maybe none of it happens. Maybe if Ronnie Mauricio is hitting 147, none of this is going to happen. And Vientos is tearing up spring training. None of this is going to happen. But you know I'm right, Hoff. That if Ronnie Mauricio tears up the Grapefruit League and those two guys have any kind of struggles, it will be a free-for-all of Ronnie Mauricio needs to make this team and he needs to be the everyday DH. You can see that coming, right?
I'll be the ringleader. What are you talking about? 100%. Listen, and I really don't know what Mark Vientos and Bert Brady have to do for them to not make the team, because I feel like they're like a given. No?
Well, okay, so Brett Beatty has an option left, so they could send him down, but I agree. I think he's a given just based on how well he played last year, and he's learning a new position in spring training, so I think he would be given kind of that, hey, it's okay. Vientos doesn't have options left, and so other than trading him at the end of spring training for a reliever, like some kind of low-value deal, which I'm not in love with, though I'll tell you, I'll say it again, and I know it makes a lot more sense for the Yankees and the Mets now based on the Met outfield. If you're the Yankees, you wouldn't trade Jason Dominguez for Mark Vientos. He's such a perfect fit for them. A right-handed bat who could play first base and third base when they're throwing out there Ryan McMahon and Ben Rice. I know Goldie's there, and Goldie certainly helps, but specifically more at third base with Ryan McMahon. Right-handed bat, pop. Giancarlo doesn't play all the time. I think the fit doesn't work as well for us because the Mets have added more outfielders. And so I don't think Dominguez does it. So, look, that trade's not going to happen. But to the Vientos point, that could be what ends up happening, where you get to the end of spring training and a team says, I want Mark Vientos, and you end up trading him for, you know, just a reliever. I don't even know which kind of reliever, but that would be the thing that happens.
The Pirates are looking at Mark Vientos, so maybe there's somebody. Look at the Pirates roster. We'll find out which bullpen arm we like from them.
I mean, but would you trade Mark Vientos for Dennis Santana?
No.
But that's all I'm saying. And by the way, that's a high-end reliever considering how well he pitched last year. So that's the kind of deal you'd be looking at the end of spring training. But they're not going to DFA Mark Vientos. I can tell you that right now. They're not going to try to clear waivers with him. Like, he'll be on the team. So barring injury, I think he is on the team or trade. But I do think Ronnie Mauricio can make this a debate. Let's get to storyline number 4. I love this about spring training. This is something I always look forward to. And that's watching the young studs, the young starting pitchers of the future. The obvious ones, the guys that are on the 40-man, the guys that are there, the guys that we will probably see at some point in 2026, Jonah Tong, who we saw a little bit last year, the return of Christian Scott. The other one who I am not familiar with, I've only become familiar with him over the last year, is Jack Weininger, who pitched in AA last year and pitched really well. And he's now kind of burst onto the scene as a guy who could very well be a part of this team before the season is over, part of the pitching depth. I assume he starts at AAA, which puts him very, very close to getting up here. He had a good year in AA. He was drafted in 2023, and he's a non-roster invitee, which means we're going to see him, which means we're actually going to watch him. You know, a lot of these prospects you don't see. You know, there's that random moment where they'll call someone over from minor league camp. You'll see him briefly, and that's it. But Jack Weininger was a minor league invitee, and because I've just never seen him pitch, I've seen Scott pitch, I've seen Tong pitch, I'm intrigued to watch him. But the Mets have a lot of good young starting pitching, and what's fun about spring training is getting to see them. And we will see that with a handful of guys. Storyline number 3, and this is one from, I guess this is one from last year that we watched, but I don't know how much we were paying attention to because we knew it wasn't going to necessarily be a permanent thing, and that was ABS. ABS is obviously coming, and because of that, I think when we watch the challenges, we watch it with a new eye because we want to know how is this going to be used in major league games. Carlos Mendoza has already said he's going to give his players free rein to challenge often and early. That doesn't mean that's how they're going to use it, but how effective you are may indicate how much free reign you get. I believe that Juan Soto is going to get complete free reign. I think that Francisco Lindor is going to get free reign. But is Francisco Alvarez, while batting, getting free reign? Is Luis Robert Jr. getting free reign? I am so glad that Jeff McNeil is not on this roster, because I figure the biggest babies, and he was a baby, no disrespect to McNeil, I'll have a warm place in my heart for his time as a Met. I don't want to kick dirt on him the way most Met fans do. But I feel like Jeff McNeil, being so whiny, would want to challenge everything. And that would be a problem. So I am curious to watch it now, more focused. And then on the other side, the catchers who are going to challenge, because I don't think they're going to allow pitchers to do it. That's like a common consensus around Major League Baseball, that pitchers are way too emotional, that it's going to be the catcher. And that is a big job of Francisco Alvarez and Luis Torrens. And that's another metric that I think that these Fangraphs need to cover. We've got pitch framing, which obviously isn't going to matter as much when you have ABS, but it still matters with 98% of the other pitches that aren't challenged. But how effective is your catcher at challenging the right calls? That's a huge stat. If Luis Torrens is 99% effective and Alvarez is 52% effective, that's going to be another reason for us to argue that maybe Luis Torrens should play more. So that is worth keeping an eye on from both aspects. When you're pitching to when you're hitting, how aggressive is it? How successful are you? And as we get to opening day, who are we confident should get free rein to challenge whatever they want? What was difficult about last year, and I gave my initial opinion on ABS, if you go back deep into the archives of early spring training last year, I didn't like it. And I've given my reasons why I don't like it. I guess I can repeat it, but I don't want to Pete Alonso this, where I repeat it over and over again. And that's all you think I do is bitch about Pete Alonso or bitch about the ABS. By the way, you should be proud of me. There's a Newsday article, I think, about Pete Alonso and his respect and how he feels so loved in Baltimore. I've actually refused to read it. And my only reference to it is that I'm not going to read it and I'm not going to bring it up because he's not a Met and I'm over. Like, I'm disappointed. I'm done. All right. Let me get back to the ABS thing. I don't like, if you're going to use computers, only using it for select moments. I would have every single pitch be based on the computer, every single one of them. I would have the umpire behind home plate, and that would be it. And we wouldn't need this challenge system. So that's my opinion. Card subject to change. Obviously, as we see this at the major league level, as we see this day in and day out, is there a chance I come on the Rico one day and say, hey, guys, I'm wrong. I like the ABS. Absolutely. I think most people did that with the pitch clock. I always loved the pitch clock, but a lot of people were against it. And I'm sure most of you who argued with me about the pitch clock now sit here all these years later and say, yeah, it's great. It's the greatest invention to ever happen to Major League Baseball. Storyline number two, this is, we're getting to the obvious ones, the position changes and analyzing, okay, how does Bo Bichette look at third base? Instead of some clips on social media, let's watch a full game of Bo Bichette playing third base. Full games of Bo Bichette playing third base. Same thing with Jorge Polanco at first base. The former first baseman of the Mets, damn it, was a great scooper. What kind of scooper is Jorge Polanco? The former first baseman almost got his pitchers killed with some flips to first base. How is Jorge Polanco as a flipper? So I think watching Polanco and watching Bichette in spring training will at least give us an early indication on how that transition is looking. Not as much with Juan Soto. We've seen him play left field. I've mentioned this before. He played more left field than right field prior to being traded to the New York Yankees 2 years ago. So that is not a positional change. Same thing with Carson Bench playing right field. We haven't seen Carson Bench, and he's played a lot of right field. He's played a lot of center field. So that is not a position change. It's really watching Bo and watching Polanco. And they have both said it when asked about the position change. I got to get into games. So once he's into games, we'll see. And hopefully we see a lot of it. You know, I know that we said at the top of the Rico, we're not going to see Alvarez for a while. We're not going to see Polanco for a while. I hope we see a ton of Bo Bichette. And he gets as many rocket ships to third base as humanly possible because he needs to be tested. And finally, it is far and away. It's not even close. No drama here. The number one spring training storyline is Carson Bench. Carson Bench is being given the keys to right field. And it started many months ago when David Stearns announced to the world, Carson Bench has a chance to be the everyday blank fielder, because we didn't know what position it would be. Center, left, right. I mean, literally Carson Bench throughout this offseason has been penciled in as the center fielder. That was early on. Then the left fielder when they got Robert. And now the right fielder with the announced move of Soto to left. So he has been positioned everywhere in the outfield. We know about what his potential is. We know about the limited experience he had at AAA and how he didn't hit that much at AAA. But this is his show. And I think what is going to be so fascinating about Carson Bench is, what does he have to do? Not just for David Stearns and Carlos Mendoza. Obviously, they're the ultimate deciders in this. But what does he have to do for you, for me, for everyone in the audience to say he should win the job? Is it stats? Is there just moments, or is it? And I think this is the case with a lot of people. He just has to breathe, and I want him to be the right fielder because I just want to watch the kid. I want to watch the prospect. I don't want to watch Tyrone Taylor and Brett Beatty platoon in right field. So I think there will be a group of Met fans that feel that way, where it doesn't really, it's not going to take much for Carson Benj to win the hearts and minds of them. But what does he have to do for Mendy and David Stearns to say he's the right fielder? So when we begin watching spring training on Saturday, and I mentioned we will do a Rico Bronya at some point on Saturday, probably Saturday night, because Hoff and I still have lives and wives and kids. And so at some point on Saturday, we will watch the game. And at some point on Saturday, you will get a Rico Bronya. If you want to consume it live, just make sure you're following WFAN on YouTube and you will get your Ricos live. If you want to wait for the podcast form, no problem. Just make sure you subscribe and it'll be in your inbox as soon as humanly possible. But we guarantee a Rico on Saturday and then a Rico on Sunday, in which there are games to talk about, amongst other things. But when Carson Benj is out there, what does he need to do? He hits a home run in his first at bat. There'll be many, many Ricoers saying, stop the count. It's over. He's the right fielder. Get it done. But this is exciting. Like, I think when you're looking for a spring training battle or a spring training storyline, it's always fun when there's a young prospect that you're going to get to watch. And we're all going to get to watch Carson Benj. Couple of notes I want to hit on. First of all, I very much appreciate the interest in the Rico Bronya Fantasy League. We announced on our last Rico that if you want to draw in the lottery of the Rico Bronya Fantasy League, just email us, therico@gmail.com, your name and your team name, and we are going to put you in a lottery, and we'll have a drawing, a fair drawing, to determine the teams in our Rico Bronya Fantasy League. I am overwhelmed by the amount of emails we got. Like, I'm not even lying to you. It's so overwhelming that now Hoff and I have to figure out how we're going to write 1,000 names and put it in this lottery. So I do want to tell you thank you for your interest, but I do want to warn you, the odds of getting into the fantasy league are incredibly low because of the interest that you guys had. It's greatly appreciated. So don't be disappointed. We're going to do this as fair as humanly possible. I promise you that. Boy Scouts honor, whatever that phrase is. I'm going to put all the names in a hat. We're going to draw it live on the Rico so you can see it, so you can know, hey, there's no funny business going on, no frozen envelopes, and we will pick names. I think it's 9 names for open spots. Well, did we decide on 14 teams? 14 feels like a lot, but maybe we should do 14 to open up just a few more opportunities. But there are 3 guaranteed spots. There's me, there's Hoff, and then there's the person who I'm still trying to track down who came up with the idea. So out of loyalty to them, they're going to be in the fantasy league. The other one I'm very mixed about is Dan. You may have heard Dan as an emailer to the Rico Bronya, but Dan also provides so much material to Evan and Tiki. He finds archives. He finds clips. He basically works for the show. And I would argue has done more for Evan and Tiki than, I don't want to be a jerk, than Sean has since he's expanded his role. I'm just kidding. Sean does a great job. And so a part of me feels like he kind of needs an automatic spot. Like, the guy's been working for me for free for 2 years. So, Hoff, I don't know if you need to think about that or if you want to be the final arbiter on that, but he did enter and he did it fairly and never said, hey, you owe me, Evan, but the guy basically works for free. I do feel like this odd obligation for him to be in the league, but we are having a lottery and 1,000 people have entered, so I do want to be fair. What say you?
I think that if that's the case, then we need a 14-team league, which allows 10 people to join.
I think that's fair. So there you go. 14-team league, me, Hoff, Dan, who's basically a worker to Evan and Tiki, and then the person who created the idea. So 10 open spots. And I'm just telling you, because I got to go through the total amount of people that have signed up or emailed. It's close to 1,000. It's a crazy number. So if we're only picking 10, just understand your odds are very low. And if I could do math, I would tell you how low your odds are. I think it's 1%, which is crazy. So do not be upset. Do not be disappointed. I do want to announce that if you win the Fantasy League, you get an automatic bid the following year. I was also thinking, Pete, how about this idea? You ready?
Give it to me.
We create a second Fantasy League. Okay, we're not in it. It's a pure listeners league. And if you win that league, you're automatically in the big one the following year. So it opens up more spots for people. It would be the second phase of the lottery. So the first phase of the lottery would be you're in the big league. And then the next phase of the lottery would be 14 more spots for a secondary league.
Yeah, like a triple A.
Like a triple A. And there's a lot on the line. You win it, you're automatically in. So we're going through it, but the lottery will take place in the next couple of weeks. We'll continue to take your entries because why not get the 2,000? Why not just make it absurd with the amount of people that want to do this? And don't enter twice, okay? Because I'm going to sniff that crap out, all right? So you can email us, therico@gmail.com. We'll do a Rico Bronya mailbag coming up on Friday Night Live on YouTube, and then you can download the podcast whenever it's up. So get your emails in, not about fantasy, but about questions about the team or comments about the team, whether it's from history or today. You have the floor with our mailbag Rico coming up in just a few days. But we appreciate you listening and downloading and subscribing to another edition, episode 638 of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.